Hey, you know where you're at. You just clicked on Bills by the Numbers, where we let the stats tell you where the Bills are at. We're brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more. On the way, what are the longest win streaks to reach the playoffs, and how many teams finished the job? We take a look. ESPN's Ed Werder joins us to talk Bills Cowboys, and Steve is tested on win streaks in the numbers game. Let's get this party started. Glad you're here with us on Bills by the Numbers. Bills Wall of Famer Steve Tasker, Bills Insider Chris Brown here with you, and we come out of the blocks with a tasty look at some of the league's more notable win streaks down the stretch to reach the postseason. I think we all recognize that the Bills have to get on a run here to ensure they get the opportunity to play postseason football. So let's go down memory lane a bit. The longest regular season win streak in history belongs to the Indianapolis Colts. They won 23 consecutive games over two seasons, won their last nine in 2008 and their first 14 in 2009. They also won the Super Bowl in between those two campaigns. Patriots are next, 21 consecutive. That covers three seasons. The last three in 06, all 16 in 07, and then another two in 08 before losing. They reached the Super Bowl in 07, but as we know, lost to the Giants. And then the 2003-2004 Patriots are tied with the 2014-15 Panthers for the third longest streak at 18. Patriots won the Super Bowl after both of those seasons. Panthers lost the Super Bowl in 2015. Those were juggernaut teams, the kind that you expect to reach the Super Bowl. That doesn't exactly match the season Buffalo has had thus far, and we'll get more appropriate comps in a minute. But do we still believe, Steve, the Bills are capable of reaching the Super Bowl at 7-6 where they currently stand?
Yeah, absolutely. What we've seen in seasons past and at different times is teams that just get hot at the right moment. Cincinnati was a great example of this a couple of years ago. They didn't win the Super Bowl, but they certainly got there. And we've seen other examples in recent history as well. And a lot of teams have been to the Super Bowl and then been out of it this playoffs one year, gone to the Super Bowl, and then struggled to get back to any semblance. So they catch that lightning in a bottle. And yes, in this league, I believe there's a lot of teams with enough talent, if they can put it together and find something that they can build on and that other teams have a problem with. And sometimes it's as simple as the arbitrary matchup you happen to get with your – the five seed gets just the perfect matchups throughout the playoffs, and all of a sudden they're in. So, there's no question this team in Buffalo is one of those teams that you could see catching fire and doing exactly what the kind of thing they did in 2021 where they almost got to the championship game for the second year in a row.
Yeah, I remember the New York Giants years back under Jim Fossil did that. They crawled in as the last wild card spot and went on a heck of a run. They went all the way to the Super Bowl. They didn't win it, but they went on a heck of a run, getting hot at the right time. The more appropriate comp, perhaps, to this current 7-6 Bills team might be a few of these teams that we're going to list for you who had to go on a run just to reach the postseason, something all of us believe the Bills need to do. One example, the 1995 San Diego Chargers. 3 years after becoming the first 0-4 team to qualify for the playoffs, the Chargers become the first team to start 4-7 and get into the postseason. That was the team that lost the Super Bowl to the 49ers the year before. So the Bolts go on to win their final five games, in at 9-7. Back then, that was good enough to land the AFC's number four seed.
AFC West, baby.
The Chargers in the final week of the regular season down 14 points to the Giants in week 17 at halftime, outscore them 24-0 in the second half, and did it without their quarterback, Stan Humphries, who was injured. But then they lose the wild card game to Indianapolis. Any similarities at all there, Steve, that you think you can draw to the 1995 San Diego team, or what differences?
I think the differences are this team is not going to do it without their quarterback. They're not going to win any games, I don't think, at this point. The league is a little different now, and I think Josh Allen, the quarterback here, so if something happens, like they'd happen to Stan Humphries back then for the Chargers, they don't get in. And also, the fact that there's seven teams, not six, only one team gets the bye. The matchups are different. You get the, and I still think they're going to be get some pushback and they will continue to get pushback when they seed the teams in either conference and you and all the division winners get a home game. Whenever that changes, and I believe it will, when they start to reseed them, and even if you're a division champion, you'll get in, but you're not going to be the four seed with a 9-7 record, or in this case, 9-8, or an 8-9 record. So, yeah, I don't. It's hard to draw analogies. It's a little bit apples to oranges for me, even though it's you're talking about something that's really similar.
Yeah, I mean, the Chargers were a team that had previous playoff success, obviously going all the way to the Super Bowl the previous year. The Bills have playoff success. So both of those teams, in terms of a parallel, knew what it took to get there, certainly capable of stacking wins when their backs are against the wall. I think what's different is that that team, the Chargers, they were out of gas because they had a deep playoff run the year before, going all the way to the Super Bowl, and they just didn't have anything left this time around when they had to work so hard just to get into the postseason. You know, Buffalo exited earlier than anybody thought last year, so it's not like they're all, you know, still kind of recovering. And you know what it's like when you're going playoffs, extra games every year. Your team kind of wore out by the time you got to 94, and you had a 7-9 campaign in 94. So I think with the Bills' early exit last year, you know, them pushing the pedal to the floor down the stretch here is not going to necessarily wear them out, cumulatively speaking, like I think it did for that Chargers team. That's why I think the Bills can get on a heater here. Speaking of heaters, the Cowboys are on one now, and we'll talk about the Cowboys a little bit later on. Other teams to consider. The 96 Jacksonville Jaguars, Steve, their rally altered the AFC. As you know, it ended Jim Kelly's Hall of Fame career, and nearly John Elway's, too. In their second season, Jaguars begin 4-7, much like that Chargers team. Mark Brunell and company win their final five, make the playoffs. They get some breaks along the way, including a 30-yard missed game winner from Hall of Famer Morton Anderson in Week 17 to give the Jags the sixth seed in the AFC. Then you think about this run. They come up to Buffalo and upset the Bills in Jim Kelly's final game. Then they beat the top-seeded Denver Broncos and John Elway, and he was considering retirement.
Right.
After losing that game, it's a good thing for him that he didn't because he won two Super Bowls after that. The Jags make it all the way to the AFC title game but lose 20-6 to the Parcells-led Patriots, who advanced to the Super Bowl and lost to Brett Favre and the Packers. More similarities or differences for you here with this year's Bills?
I would say less similarities, and I would say the Bills, because of their pedigree, are much different than that Jaguars team. Nobody knew who Mark Brunell was at that time. They didn't know he was going to be a Hall of Famer. And even if the Bills get in, because of the landscape, there's no John Elway and Jim Kelly. I mean, you're looking at teams with backup quarterbacks and young quarterbacks ahead of them. Certainly Miami and Kansas City and Jacksonville are there. But after those top three guys, you're looking at a landscape quarterback-wise in the AFC – and a logjam in the AFC.
You say Baltimore, too?
And Baltimore as well.
Yeah.
You're looking at, you know, a landscape that is
riddled with backups.
Riddled.
Yeah.
And half of the teams are, you know, three at least of the seven teams, unless Buffalo's one of those seven teams, are going to have backup quarterbacks and rookie quarterbacks starting. So I think the landscape's a little different. And I do think that back in, you know, 96, don't think it was as common. I just don't think the league was, you know, as level as it is now. I mean, you've
there
got
more haves and
have-nots. There are more haves and have-nots at that time. But
I tend to agree with you.
You got to tip your hat to the Jacksonville Jaguars. They put on a run there in their second year of existence and got to the championship game.
Yeah.
And then and to go into Denver and scare those guys the way they did just in their second year, almost beating them there.
No, they did beat them.
They did beat them.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Went
to the AFC title game.
And that's amazing. That's really amazing. It's like
that might be more impressive for Tom Coughlin taking a second-year expansion franchise to the AFC title game.
Well,
maybe not.
So did Dom Capers down in Carolina.
Right, they did it the same year.
They did it the same year. And there's a lot in this, and it's a different topic, but Bill Polian when he left Buffalo, had worked for the National Football League closely for an entire year away from being in the front office for a team. He set up the rules to let them expand with Jacksonville and Carolina. Then Carolina hired him to take advantage of the rules he put in place.
How convenient.
And both teams benefited from it. Yeah. I thought it was a great move by the league. Hey, listen, because in past, Tampa Bay, it took them a decade, well, 5 years to get into the playoffs, and even it took them 2 years, full years, over 2 years to win a game.
Right.
So they didn't want that to happen this time around in expansion. So they changed the rules. Bill Polian helped them, and certainly both those clubs saw the benefit.
Well, thank you for that history lesson there, Steve. That was great. I tend to agree with you, though. I don't think this one translates for me. It's a second-year expansion team. They had nothing to lose, zero expectations. They beat a couple of aging AFC playoff teams, although their win over the top-seeded Broncos was admittedly impressive. I think Buffalo right now is a veteran playoff team where these Jaguars were like verified upstarts, for lack of a better term. You said nobody knew who Mark Brunell was. Nobody knew who the Jaguars were, as a team.
Right. Even Tom Coughlin was unknown.
That's right. So let's try this one. How about the 98 Buffalo Bills? Got off to an 0-3 start with Rob Johnson starting. He gets hurt. Flutie comes in, and the team gets on a run. They win five in a row to get to 5-3 at the turn. Then win five of their last seven to finish 10-6. They grab a wild card spot. But as we know, they lost in Miami as Flutie was sacked in a goal-to-go situation that could have tied the game. At the end, Trace Armstrong be damned. other than that, the team being the same, any parallels there, do you think?
A little bit more there because of the Dolphin connection. That's the team the Bills are chasing right now. That's the team that they had to go down and play in that wild card game down there. I think that was a Jimmy Johnson game?
Yes.
Yeah, and so there's a little bit more there because of the division rivalry that's on, and that team, obviously, because of the way they turned it around, had that five-game winning streak. That's the kind of engine this team has with Josh Allen, with Steph Diggs, the defensive line, and the guys playing, James Cook emerging and Kincaid and those guys. I think they've got the engine to go on a run like that. Mm. Offensively, certainly it was a weird time with the Flutie-Johnson kind of stuff going on. But
that was just the start of it.
Right.
For 3 years.
Oh, yeah. So I think there are some similarities there outside of that quarterback thing because that team, there was something in that team, well, like an Eric Moulds mostly. I mean, the guy was a phenomenal player.
Yeah.
Guys like that who could step in and really drive the engine of the offense and carry him to five straight wins. So, yeah, there's a little more similarities there to that 98 Bills team than there is, you know, this one.
Yeah, I think the streak capabilities of the 98 team may line up with what this year's team can do. But in terms of the makeup of the team, I think it's different. That 98 team was kind of a team in transition. Marv was gone. Wade was in. You had older players from the glory days still on the roster. They had added some free agent veterans as well. There was quarterback shuffling, as we mentioned. I think one thing that is the same is Buffalo back in 98 struggled to win games in their own division. They split with Miami. They split with New England. They swept Indy and got swept by the Jets to finish 4-4 in the division. Now, this year's Bills team, believe it or not, can do a bit better. They can finish 4-2 if they beat New England and Miami in the last 2 weeks of the regular season. But they were 1-2 in the division just a couple of months ago and had similar struggles. But that's about it for me. And that was a year removed from a coaching change and not making the playoffs the prior year as well in 97. Our final attempt to find common ground comes with the 2016 Green Bay Packers. This team was 4-6 after blowout losses to mediocre Tennessee and Washington squads. Aaron Rodgers led a flawed Packers roster to 8 straight wins and into the NFC title game. Now, Green Bay at the time did not have a reliable defense or a productive running game. Their rushing leader, Ty Montgomery, 457 yards on the season.
Mm-hmm.
Rodgers, though, was at his peak in terms of his passing powers with Davante Adams and Jordy Nelson. The two wideouts had 26 combined touchdowns. Rodgers then outdueled the number one seeded Cowboys to reach his third NFC title game. What do we think of this comparison?
I like this one a little better. I think Josh has more help than Rodgers did at that time, although we have Devontae Adams and Steph Diggs and Jordy Nelson with either take Kincaid or whoever you want to put in there. I think this team looks better on paper than that Packer team did. And this team's got a different style of quarterback than Aaron Rodgers.
True.
But that kind of what makes that finger quotes thing that makes the team tick is exactly the same as that 16 Packer team. It's Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I think I like this comparison the best in terms of parallels. They had the kind of quarterback that could mask some of the team's deficiencies, just like the Bills. The Packers' defense was far from perfect, and I think with some of the injury losses the Bills incurred through the course of the season, they're a bit limited on defense, too. We've seen that. But Buffalo, right now, I think has a better run game than that Packers team, although Devontae Adams and Jordy Nelson, that's a pretty tough duo to top.
Right.
They won their last six games to finish 10-6, those Packers, in 2016, and then won two playoff games. I can see the Bills kind of having a streak like that, but as we know, they got to get in first.
Right.
The Cowboys is where we turn our attention now. That's a team on a heater already. They've won their last five in a row, with four of them by 20 points or more. Here to help us break down the Cowboys and their matchup with Buffalo this week is veteran ESPN reporter Ed Werder. Okay, Ed, let's begin here. We know that Dak Prescott is a polarizing figure for the national media. But, I mean, he's put together a fantastic season here thus far, and yet he's still criticized for the level of competition that they've played this year in terms of teams with winning records and such. You can't blame Dak and the Cowboys for who's on their schedule. How is it playing in Dallas? Like, are they talking MVP for him? What's the general feedback from the fan base on his performance so far this season?
Yeah, I think everybody is pretty ecstatic about the way that Dak Prescott has played, especially since the San Francisco game that they lost by 32 points, which was sort of a measuring stick game for them because the 49ers had eliminated them in the playoffs each of the last 2 years. And the Cowboys went into that game with huge expectations and suffered the worst loss of the Mike McCarthy era in Dallas and the worst loss that Dak Prescott has known as an NFL player. They had their bye week. They sort of reinvented themselves coming out of their bye week, and they've been virtually unstoppable since then. And one of the things I think that's made the biggest difference is, and the thing that kind of has launched Dak in the direction of being a potential MVP, which the Cowboys had one in their history, and it was Emmitt Smith, back at a period of time you don't want to talk about in the 1990s. But Dak decided at that point he needed to use his mobility more than he had been at that point. And so he began to not only run the football at key points in the game, but also to scramble, extend plays, get outside the pocket. And he's been, like Josh Allen, one of the best quarterbacks in football out of the pocket. And they've obviously been a very dominant team at home. And credit to Dak Prescott because he's endured a difficult season. If you remember, they traded for Trey Lance. They did not extend Dak Prescott's contract like Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones had been promising before the season. And so there was a sense of the Cowboys were not, despite what they said in the front office publicly, they were not entirely committed to Dak Prescott long term. I think that has certainly changed now.
How much has Mike McCarthy adjusted his play calling and now that Dak's in the second year of this offense? How has that relationship gone? It's obviously in the last five games, it's been off the charts.
Yeah, it's kind of a curious thing, right? When they hired Mike McCarthy after he'd been fired in Green Bay and sat out a year, you bring in a guy who's called plays his entire career with a brief exception that he said he would never delegate the position again. He always wanted to be the play caller. Comes to Dallas, inherits Kellen Moore, a Jerry Jones favorite, and he doesn't call plays for the first 3 years. And this year, after the loss in San Francisco, where they scored only 14 points in the game last year, they made a change. They let Kellen Moore go. Mike McCarthy became the play caller, first head coach in 12 years in Dallas to be the play caller. And obviously, they did look like a first-year offense early in the year, but Mike has really made a significant difference. Dak Prescott will credit him with not only the aggressive mindset with which they play, you know, pushing the ball down the field, but also just his footwork and, you know, coordinating the timing between receivers coming out of their break and Dak and his footwork and, you know, hitting, you know, certain launch points along the way. Dak's obviously having a remarkable season. And he's taking advantage of the fact that, you know, they improved the offense going out and getting, you know, Brandon Cooks to be a vertical receiver that they didn't have last year. But the funny thing is this is not really the offense Mike McCarthy imagined at the beginning of the year. He talked about, hey, we know the defense is our strength as a football team. We're going to run the ball. We're going to play to that. But if you look at what's happened, they're a pass-first offense in every sense of the term.
Speaking of that defense, Ed, they have a pretty high blitz rate, which kind of surprised me because I was thinking to myself, you got DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons. Do you have to really get exotic? How exotic would you say the defense, you know, under Dan Quinn has gotten at times this season? Or is it pretty much just we're going to line up and play and our best is going to beat your best?
They play a lot of man coverage and they do blitz quite a bit, primarily on third down. They'll send five rushers, I think. You know, one of the highest rates in the NFL. They're trying to get the ball out. They're trying to create some indecision, some panic by quarterbacks and have the ability to, you know, take advantage of the back end where De'Ron Bland has 8 interceptions and a record 5 pick sixes. You know, this defense is all about creating pressure under Dan Quinn. It's all about creating, you know, opportunities for takeaways, which not surprising since Dan Quinn was hired as the defensive coordinator the same offseason Micah Parsons was drafted in the first round. You know, the Cowboys lead the NFL in takeaways with 88. Nobody is within 8 of that, and that's Buffalo. Buffalo's next with 80. And they also lead the NFL in interceptions during that period of time. And so I think that'll be a big point for the Cowboys. Emphasis on defense this week is create pressure on Josh Allen, a guy who's been pretty well protected. And is able to get outside the pocket, but at times has been mistake-prone with, what, an interception 9 games in a row. The Cowboys will certainly be looking to take advantage of that.
And the last one for me, Ed, we've seen a lot of every team in the league has got this alpha male out wide. You know, the Bills have Steph Diggs, and now CeeDee Lamb shows up in Dallas, and that guy has been unbelievable for Dak Prescott. Why haven't anybody figured out a way to take him away? And if they do, who's next?
Well, I think if you talk to players around the league on defense, you know, the two guys that they worry about the most right now are CeeDee Lamb first and Jake Ferguson, the second-year tight end, secondly. And then they can still hurt you, as we've seen in recent games, with Brandon Cooks, who has 5 touchdowns. But there's certainly been, and I mentioned the San Francisco game earlier as a turning point, that was the same game where, you know, CeeDee Lamb was openly frustrated and expressed that frustration publicly. And that led to a meeting with McCarthy and Dak Prescott. And since then, there has been a real point of emphasis to make sure he's involved and involved heavily and early. He's gotten as many as 17 targets in certain games this year. And he has certainly been able to beat coverage on a consistent basis. You know, he's got the versatility to play in the slot. He can play as a boundary receiver. And he creates opportunities for others. But, yeah, there's no question that he's been a different player not only since that San Francisco loss, but really this entire year has been different for him in that he's being accorded the opportunities that you would normally associate with the number one receiver, kind of like, you know, what McCarthy did early in Devontae Adams' career in Green Bay. I remember people talking about Green Bay, people on the coaching staff and scouting department say, why are we throwing so many balls to Devontae Adams? We act like he's Julio Jones or something. Well, he is Julio Jones, as it turns out, and maybe better. So, yeah, CeeDee Lamb is definitely a priority for every defense in the NFL. He's getting a ton of opportunities, and, you know, he's another guy who's going to require a contract this offseason, and it's going to be an expensive one.
Before we let you go, Ed, I do have to ask you about this fantastic rookie kicker, because there's a great story there, being a former soccer player. He's already got the rookie team record, 8 field goals of 50 yards or more already, and he's 30 for 30. The kid hasn't missed. First of all, if you could give us a little bit on his backstory, and second, what kind of kid is this? Is he just ice water in the veins, or is he just like, I got nothing to lose, so let's just have some fun here?
Yeah, he's a player. He was in the USFL. And so the Cowboys have now signed two Pro Bowl players out of the USL. Kevontae Turpin, the receiver slash kick returner, went to the Pro Bowl last year. Brandon Aubrey seems like an automatic. He's sort of the kicking equivalent of C.J. Stroud. But, yeah, he played soccer at Notre Dame and did not kick in high school on a football team. He did not kick in college on a football team. The Cowboys obviously looking for a kicker in the offseason after Brett Maher missed, what, four extra points in a single postseason game at Tampa, an NFL record. Lost the trust of the coaching staff. They signed Aubrey. They quickly decided in training camp that he was going to be their kicker, and he has certainly rewarded that. I mean, the NFL record at the beginning of the season for a kicker in terms of making consecutive field goals at the start of a career was 17. He's nearly doubled that,
yeah,
as you mentioned, with 30. And what he did the other night, 60 yards, 59 yards, first player in NFL history with two kicks in the same game of 59 yards or longer. And it just looks like he has such easy power. I wish I could swing my driver and get the kind of results with the smooth, effortless, warm up and so forth that we see from him. But yeah, he's been a game changer. You just wonder, when is that first miss going to come? What are the circumstances going to be, and how devastating might it prove to be in the outcome of a game, since he's 30 for 30 at this point? They think he has range up to 70 yards. Wow. Probably won't see that at Orchard Park in the winter, even on a relatively nice day, as the weather forecast calls for. But, yeah, just the easy power and incredible consistency. I mean, you saw it the other day. McCarthy in the first quarter is kicking a 60-yard field goal, risking giving the Eagles the ball at midfield if they miss. That's the kind of faith they have in him.
Yeah, and that kick was a no-doubter, too.
Yeah,
I mean, amazing.
Great.
Absolutely amazing.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks for the time, Ed.
Good
appreciate
to talk to you
it.
Guys. I'll see you Sunday.
All right, good conversation there with Ed Werder. Happy to have him. Time to transition to the numbers game, and Steve will be quizzed on what else? Winning streaks. We're talking about it the whole show here. Why not keep it going? So, Steve,
all right.
Question number one. Which NFL club had the longest winning streak in the 2022 regular season? Longest winning streak last year, regular season.
Who was good last year?
Well, there were a bunch of teams that were good.
Right. I'm going to say... I'm going to go with Philly, the hot team.
That is a good guess, but it is incorrect.
All right, then KC.
It was not Kansas City either. One more. See if the third one's the charm.
San Francisco.
There you go. San Francisco, 10 consecutive victories.
Yeah, that's a nice streak.
Question number two. What is the longest active winning streak by one team over another in NFL history?
Are the Bills involved?
They are not. Okay. And I will give you a hint. It's still active.
Really?
Oh, yes, indeedy.
Kansas City over... Denver.
That is incorrect. Denver just beat them this year.
Oh. Kansas City over Las Vegas.
No, again. It's a little closer to home, Steve.
Is it? New England over the Jets.
There you go. New England over the J-E-T-S. Jets, Jets, Jets. 15 straight.
Right now it's 15 straight?
It's still alive.
Dude, come on. Come on.
Wait a minute. Do they don't play again this
no,
year?
No, they're done. It will stretch into next season.
Wow, that's
question number three.
Horrible.
What is the longest winning streak? What is the longest winning streak by one team over another in NFL history? The previous question, the longest active winning streak. One team over another. I'm asking you for the longest winning streak by one team over another in NFL history.
Gotta be. Oh, well, let's see.
So active is 15 games.
Right.
This one is longer.
And it also probably doesn't have to be in a division, does it? Is it in division?
It is.
Okay. Okay. So it's not Carolina. I'm going to say the Cardinals are one of the teams.
They are not.
All right.
The Bears? No again.
Detroit?
No.
LA Chargers?
You're thinking too hard here.
Oh, am I?
It's right in front of you, and you'll be disappointed if you don't get it.
The Bills?
It is right, and...
The Bills are on the wrong end of it.
Yes.
And the streak got to be New England.
No. Oh, for the...
Oh, my gosh. Miami Dolphins.
Miami
and the
Bills. Dolphins.
Yeah.
Oh, for the 70s. 20
yeah,
20 games.
Yeah.
That's the longest one.
Should have known that.
Final question.
That's a big mental mistake on my part.
We all have them. Yeah. Question 4. What team has the longest active playoff losing streak and the longest historical playoff losing streak? They are one and the same. So it's the same answer for both questions.
All right.
Longest active playoff losing streak, longest playoff losing streak in NFL history.
Oh, it's longest active.
So it's still on right now. So you have to think about a team that has...
Cleveland.
It is not Cleveland, but you are on the right track. In terms of... It's one of those kinds of teams, Steve.
Chicago.
Getting closer.
Detroit.
There you go.
Detroit hasn't been in the playoffs for like
the Detroit
12
Lions
years or 15
at
years.
9 games. 9 straight playoff defeats, which began in 1991 and continues
today.
We'll see if Dan Campbell and the crew can end it this year.
They haven't won a playoff game in 32 years?
That is correct.
Ouch.
You got to go back to the Wayne Font days.
And you think, yes, and you think I disparage the NFC North for no reason. That right there is on the front page.
I knew you.
That is the front page of the newspaper above the fold.
I'm just going to say it is not a mistake that question 4 was in the numbers game. That was just for you.
Thank
so you.
So
you could guess the Detroit Lions.
It vindicates my long-held belief that the NFC North is an atrocity, top to bottom.
Yeah, the NFC least, I think, is what they used to
call
it.
Oh, my gosh.
Bills fans, get in on the action with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Just download the app today to play any way you want. Plus, with live betting, you'll get updated odds on games that have already started. Best of all, you get paid your winnings fast. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the Buffalo Bills. We now help you with the free-to-play pick'em game on FanDuel.com called High Low. Each week, pick a player or team to finish with the highest or lowest total for the week in a number of different categories to earn points. The more points you earn, the bigger prize you can win. Play free for a chance at 10 grand in total prizes every Sunday. I'll lead us off with high for passing yards this week. I'm going to take the high-flying L.A. Rams. Matthew Stafford was dealing last week against the Ravens, one of the top defenses in football. I think he has a repeat performance against the defense that has given up more yards and more points than any other defense in the league. Yes, my friends, the Washington Commanders. So I'll take Stafford and the Rams.
All right, for low in passing yards, I'm going to take the New England Patriots against the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, the game is in New England, but Kansas City, they're not going to lose 3 games in a row, and they're not going to lose to this they're not going to lose to this New England team. I think that Kansas City defense is going to put the stymie on whoever it is that's going to play quarterback for the New England Patriots.
Probably Zappy? We don't even know.
It's going to be
How
Zappy.
How messed up is that?
Pretty messed up.
Yeah. High for rushing yards. I really like Christian McCaffrey against the Cardinals' 31st-ranked run defense. He's been dicing up defenses of late, and I think that continues against Arizona. Nothing else needs to be said.
Low for rushing yards. I'm going to go with A.J. Dillon from the Packers. Even with Aaron Jones, he's been hurt. Dillon doesn't get all the work out of the backfield. So against a very good run front, A.J. Dillon does not pop off the page, and Tampa has a top-10 run defense. So A.J. Dillon is the play for me, low in rushing yards.
All right, high for receiving yards. I'm going back to that Rams game against the Commanders. They're last in the league against the pass, and I think Cooper Kupp is hitting his stride now after the early season injury. So give me the Cupster. High for receiving yards.
Low for receiving yards. I'm going to pick that same game, the Commanders, Terry McLaurin against the Rams defense. It has less to do with the Rams, though, than it does the pecking order receiver for Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Sam Howell tends to lean more towards Jahan Dotson and Curtis Samuel in the pass game. So unless McLaurin makes this giant play or catches something that we don't see coming, I think I don't see enough opportunities for him to get receiving yards. So I'm going to take
Terry McLaurin for low and receiving yards.
All right, that is your high-low picks for Week 15. Our closing figure deals with point differential and points per game. Since 2021, the Bills and Cowboys have the highest point differential in the league. Dallas at plus 485, Buffalo at plus 467, and the Bills and Cowboys also have, not coincidentally, the two highest points per game averages over that span. Dallas at 30.2 points per game, and Buffalo at 28 points per game. That's it for this edition of Bills by the Numbers. Make sure you subscribe on whatever podcast platform you use. That way, you know when our next episode is out. Because when you need to know about the Bills, you need to check Bills by the Numbers. For Steve Tasker, I'm Chris Brown. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time, everybody.